Eric Childress is live in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. Hello, man.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Now, did you vote early? Did you mail in your vote? What's the deal?
I voted early.
Oh, good for you.
I went to my local place and voted a few days before I left.
Good for you, man. Way to be a good American, my friend. Out of town on election day, and yet Eric cast his vote. God bless you, man. All right, so let's try to get one movie in. You're at the South by Southwest Film Festival. Let's get one movie in before we break here, and then we'll come back and talk some more. But what's the first one you'd like to talk to us about?
The one you asked me if I was going to see today.
Yes. Now, there were two movies about improv that were debuting at the South by Southwest Film Festival. So, obviously, I had a huge interest in it. One was a documentary about Del Close.
Yes.
That I've heard is good. Very excited about that
one. I haven't seen it, but yeah.
And the other one is not a documentary. It's a fictional narrative, and it's called Don't Think Twice.
Yes, and it was written and directed and stars Mike Birbiglia, who is a really terrific comedian who did Sleepwalk with Me a few years ago.
That was a terrific movie about his stand-up life.
And he follows it up with another winner, a film that I think is even better than Sleepwalk with Me. Don't Think Twice revolves around a improv troupe in New York, a six-person team that includes Mike Birbiglia, Gillian Jacobs, Keegan-Michael Key, Kate Mercucci, and a couple other people who, you know, they go about their improv thing every night. They're just on the cusp of fame in a way because they're in New York, and in New York there's a very popular Saturday night show.
Yep.
That happens. Okay. although in the movie it's not called, you know, Saturday Night Live, it's called Weekend Live.
Got it.
Okay, but they make no bones about it that it's Saturday Night Live.
Of course.
So as one of the members ends up getting a gig on the show, it begins to sort of form a rift between everyone. People, you know, want to try to glom onto the guy that got the gig and try to, you know, get their writing samples into the show, or, you know, maybe, you know, another, there might be room for another person from the troupe to, you know, find their way finally onto the show. And it's a really funny, engaging movie, and ultimately very sad, because this movie, we've seen a lot of movies that have attempted to introduce improv stuff into film, and it's kind of an aside, really. This movie, and I'm sure you will appreciate it even more, is that this movie really sort of gets what it's like to be. To be in an improv troupe, to be in live theater where there's not a lot of money involved, that you're doing it for the love of the show, but at the same time you have to make ends meet.
Yeah.
And it really balances that those two aspects really, really beautifully. And Keegan-Michael Key is particularly strong in this movie, but ultimately the movie kind of comes down to, once again, Gillian Jacobs.
What a year, man!
I'm telling you, man. I mean, if you were not in love with her after, you know, whatever season of Community, you know, you finished on, and you haven't gotten through Love yet,
which is so great.
So good. Best thing she's ever done.
Ever, without question.
Yeah,
like Emmy good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and though this is definitely an ensemble piece, Gillian Jacobs gets several moments to shine. She's one of the characters that definitely has sort of a full arc throughout the movie. This is a really terrific film that I hope people get to see.
I hope so too. When I heard about it, of course, I texted you right away.
Yes,
and I can't wait to see it. I really,
you're
really
gonna absolutely love it.
I can't wait. And so that's Don't Think Twice. It doesn't have a date or anything. Did it get like distribution, or do we know what's going on with it? Do we know if it's going to get released?
Yeah, he's going to be touring the film.
Actually. Oh, he is.
He's going to be touring the film through however many cities they're going to be doing it. So it will be coming to Chicago at some point.
Cool. He'll probably do it at the Music Box. That's usually because he did Sleepwalk with Me at the Music Box.
He did Sleepwalk with Me at the Music Box,
yeah.
And Ira Glass was with him today at the screening doing the Q&A afterwards. Uh-huh. So, yeah. So okay. You will see this in Chicago at some point.
I can't wait to see it. I'm so excited about it. Don't Think Twice is the movie, and we'll see it here at some point soon. And by the way, if you have not watched Love on Netflix, seriously, you're really missing out on something special. I mean, I really thought it was terrific. I think it's the best thing that Judd Apatow's had his name on in years. I really do. So hang on, Eric, okay?
Yep.
All right, Eric Childress is with us. South by Southwest Film Festival preview continues. Morning, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. After 3 o'clock, you're going to get help to do some fun and very cheap celebrations of St. Patrick's Day, which is right around the corner, and Easter. Stacey Nelson is going to join us after 3 to talk about that. Right now, Eric Childress is with us. He's live in Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival, giving us exclusive previews of some of the movies he's seen. And let's get back to Eric. All right, Eric, go ahead with the next one.
Hey, man. Okay, so the South by Southwest announced their awards for the evening.
For the festival, okay. Okay.
Right. And the winner of the narrative feature competition is a film called The Arbalest, which I saw today. And it doesn't have any stars in it, but it's sort of framed as this period piece set in the late 1960s when this toy designer is going to go to this big toy convention conference and introduce his latest toy. And during the course of this weekend, he ends up meeting a guy that is form this little puzzle cube that has all different colors on different sides, and you have mix and match and whatnot, you know, and his name isn't exactly Rubik, but it's the Rubik's Cube. So in the course of this sort of this drunken evening he has with this guy and his lady friend, he becomes obsessed with his lady friend. The guy ends up dying, and he ends up taking credit for not the Rubik's Cube, but this other triangular cube that this guy invented. So they go their separate ways. He's collecting money. He sends her checks, but he's completely obsessed with this woman for the next 10 years, writing her letters, and she wants nothing to do with him. She just cashes the checks, and it leads to this showdown 10 years later where he's gone through all these drug issues, and he's taking a vow of silence, and doing a Rolling Stone article that rivals Tom Cruise and Magnolia.
Oh, wow. Okay, look, hang on. Yeah. Hang on, Eric, okay?
Okay.
Because I want to get more from this. Eric is talking about The Arborist, which is the film that actually won the Grand Jury Prize at South by Southwest Film Festival. That's where Eric is right now. And we'll get a rundown on the winner of that award and more right here on 720 WGN. We got a break for the news. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 for talk and text anytime you want. 312-981-7200. If you would like to check us out on Twitter, it's at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is to like us on Facebook, and we're very, very close to 12,000 fans, so let's do that. So like us and let's hit that number. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us and stay connected. I mean, everything is updated, and it's everything that's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page and more. So facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us. And there you go. Stacey Nelson is going to join us. She's an award-winning designer, and she's going to give you hints and party tips for St. Patrick's Day and for Easter. And that's coming up after 3. We will pay tribute to the great Jerry Lewis, who today, on the 16th of March, turns 90. One of my favorite people ever in the world, Mr. Jerry Lewis. We'll pay tribute to Jerry Lewis, who turns 90 today. But Eric Childress, who is our good friend who reviews movies with me and Colin Suter every Monday morning, is at the South by Southwest Film Festival, and he was in the middle of telling us about a movie called The Arbalest, which actually won the Grand Jury Prize. And Eric, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
And it says here that this is the plot of the movie. It says the inventor of the world's greatest toy reflects on his obsession with a woman who hates him.
Yeah.
Does that pretty much describe the movie?
That pretty much accurately describes the 75-minute movie that I saw.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you gave us the synopsis and everything, and it won the Grand Jury Prize. And I have a feeling that you disagree with that winning the Grand Jury Prize.
It's awful. It is the worst non-midnight film I've seen the entire festival.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I looked at that like, you know, reading Donald Trump wins the election in November.
Yeah, wow.
Maybe not as bad as that, but still. Yeah,
the repercussions of that are a little bit more devastating. But
yeah, one's Armageddon, one's just like, who the hell was on this jury?
Wow.
Yeah.
So the arbalest, not good.
No. I mean, it's poorly made. It has the worst performance I've seen the entire fest by the woman who he's obsessed with. Mm-hmm. An absolutely atrocious performance, and nothing about the movie comes together with anything. There's no real suspense. There's no the comedy is awful. It's just kind of ugly. By the end of it, it's just kind of ugly, and it really just kind of makes no sense by the end.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah,
all right.
He comes up with another invention that we know has been invented for a long time. Let's just say his last name is Colt.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So not disagreeing with the grand jury prize for the arbalest.
Yes.
Okay. And all right. What do you got next?
Okay, well, here's a film that I'm not sure if it was actually up for in the competition category, but a film that I saw tonight, a small film, again, not a huge cast, mm-hmm. But one I hope will be on eventually get on a lot of people's radars. It's a movie called American Fable.
Okay.
And it's a story about an 11-year-old girl. It's like 1980 or like 1981 Reagan era during a lot of the – sort of the farming crisis where a lot of farms are being closed or shut down or repossessed, basically. And she lives on a farm with her father, played by Kip Pardue, and her older brother and mother. And people are losing their farms in the area. And one day she discovers on one of the silos within their farm's acreage lies a man played by Richard Schiff. Who is a banker who has been kidnapped by someone connected with what's going on, and they sort of form a sort of a captive hostage relationship a bit as the girl starts bringing him food and whatnot, and she quickly begins to discover that her father may be involved in this in somehow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's the title is very apropos because it reiterates a bunch of classic fables that we talk about. There's a kind of a little bit of a Pan's Labyrinth feel to it a little bit. There's some fantastical imagery in the film. It's gorgeously photographed. It's one of the most gorgeously photographed films I've seen at this festival in some time. It's just there are images in this movie that are just unbelievably gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it's really wonderfully acted. It pays off really well by the end. I was just sort of sitting there just like wondering why this movie hasn't been getting talked about more. It's just had a second screening tonight. It's when I saw it, and it has almost like a Stephen King Castle Rock type story feel to it. In a way, just one of those sort of those homespun tales that he tells that have, you know, characters doing some despicable things and, you know, people, kids trying to maintain their innocence through it. But it's a really terrific film. One of the best that I've seen at the festival so far.
Okay. All right. American Fable. And I'm looking at the director. It's her first movie. She also wrote it. Anne Hamilton is her name.
Yeah. And I think the someone at the introduction said that she either studied under Terrence Malick or maybe had something to do with the Tree of Life or something.
Oh, okay.
So I have to look that up.
Okay.
But there's definitely that sort of feel to it. The child's remembrance, beautiful imagery. So if she was just taking from Tree of Life, well, she clearly took the best parts.
Okay. All right. American Fable, that's called. And hopefully we'll get a chance to see that one. I mean, Richard Schiff is a pretty big name.
Yeah, no, he's really good in it, and Kip Pardue is actually really good in the film too, as her father.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are certainly names, but the girl is a newbie. Her brother, looked a little familiar, but I don't know if we've seen him before. Rusty Schwimmer has a part in the film, so
okay, all right,
good movie.
That's American Fable, and it's a good one. All right. Yeah. Okay, what's next, Eric?
Okay, next one is War on Everyone.
Okay.
And this is a new film from John Michael McDonough, who is the brother of Martin McDonough, who did In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths.
Right.
And John Michael McDonough has done The Guard and Calvary. And War on Everyone is, it would be very easy to confuse which brother actually made this movie, because this one certainly fits more of Martin's sensibilities for just crazy plotting and outrageous characters saying outrageous things and a lot of just ridiculous violence throughout. It stars Michael Pena and Alexander Skarsgård as a couple of detectives who basically threw the rule book out a long time ago. I mean,
hey, more dirty cops.
More dirty cops. Yes.
that's the theme for 2016, evidently.
Absolutely. and the film sort of really just kind of starts off guns blazing. It almost feels like the opening to like a 70s TV cop show. But then it's sort of infused with sort of the late 80s, early 90s mentality of Shane Black's buddy cop movies. And then just sort of wrapped up in like a crazy Elmore Leonard-like plot.
Wow.
Yeah, which, again, I can't really even explain to you exactly everything that goes on in this movie. Basically, the two of them sort of team up to pull off or to sort of reap the benefits of this impending racetrack heist. And when someone beats them to the actual payoff, they then basically have to solve the crime to then find out exactly how they're actually going to get the actual payoff that they were trying to steal from in the first place.
Okay.
And it leads them down a very, very dark rabbit hole. That leads to a lot of really very unsavory characters, a lot of crazy violence, a lot of very un-PC things happening in this movie. I mean, Paul Reiser plays their commander-in-chief.
Really?
their commanding officer in the movie, and he's very funny in it.
Yeah.
Pena kills in this movie. Michael Pena is absolutely terrific, and Skarsgård is really funny, too. It all completely comes together, but I had a blast watching it.
Wow, that's cool. All right, yeah. So that's War on Everyone. Now, is this one going to see a release? I mean, these are pretty big names, and John Michael McDonough's other two movies were very good, actually.
Yeah, it hasn't been picked up yet by an American distributor, which kind of surprises me. This film, it debuted at Berlin Film Festival last month, and now it's playing here, so I don't know what exactly the plan is for this one. I mean, it's a crazy film, certainly to market. But you know, I guess all his other movies were not exactly easy sells either.
Sure.
And they found a distributor. So yeah. I'd be shocked if like a Fox Searchlight or someone like that didn't come around to this eventually.
McDonough couldn't find room for Cole Meany anywhere.
No Cole Meany.
Oh,
in
man.
This one. No, I'm sorry.
All right. That's War on Everyone. That sounds great. That sounds very, very good. Okay, why don't we take a quick break, Eric? Think about a few more movies that you want to tell us about. And when we come back, we'll go back to you.
Sounds good.
All right. Eric Childress is with us, giving us an exclusive report live from Austin, Texas, at the South by Southwest Film Festival. And we'll get more. And again, if you're missing some of these, you know, you can always check out our podcast if you want to check them out and remember the names of the movies and stuff like that. Our podcasts are always available the following morning after the show at WGNRadio.com or subscribe at iTunes, and they all automatically, they're free, and it'll automatically show up on your device. You can listen at your leisure, bro. All right, we'll come back, take another break, and when we get back, we'll talk more with Eric about the South by Southwest Film Festival. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, man, it's Wednesday. Yeah. And we're talking with Eric Childress, who is in Austin, Texas right now, live at the South by South Film Festival, giving us exclusive preview and look at some of the movies that he's seeing while he's there. Now, Eric, how long have you been there? You got there Friday, right?
Got there Friday, yeah.
And when do you leave?
First thing Thursday morning.
Okay, so how many movies are you planning on seeing between now and Thursday morning?
Well, I've seen in town, I've seen 20 so far. And seeing three or four tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah.
And how?
I got a bunch to watch when I get home.
Then you got stuff to watch when you get home. When does the fest actually end?
The 19th.
So the film fest ends on the 19th, which is Sunday.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
I think the
Saturday.
Music Fest, I think, goes, yeah.
And then the Music Fest continues.
Yes.
Okay. All right. It must be, I mean, that's such a great town. It must be, you know, a lot of fun. It's got to be busy because there's so much stuff going on. Like, there's tech stuff going on. As we just heard the opening bell, they're going to be talking about that. Steve Grzanich is going to be talking about that in a couple hours. And you got the Music Fest and the Film Fest. I mean, in Austin, even when there's no festivals, it's a really fun town. So it must be a good time to go to these things, yeah.
Yeah, and you had all, I mean, we had President Obama was here on Friday, so, you know, that was obviously clearly a huge deal around town.
Yeah.
You said the Music Fest is just starting tomorrow, I believe, or today. That's today, actually.
Okay.
So that's going to make it even more crazy. I mean, 6th Street is just a nonstop party. Maybe not exactly a party I want to be invited to, but it's going on.
Okay. All right. I do want to mention, by the way, you were just talking about a war on everyone.
Yes.
And I was just looking at the cast list, and that lovely Tessa Thompson from Creed is in it.
Yes. She plays Skarsgård's love interest.
I enjoy Tessa Thompson very much.
Good for you.
I enjoyed her very much in Creed.
Yes, and you will probably enjoy her in War and Everyone as well.
Good. Good. Okay. So what's next, my friend?
My Blind Brother.
My Blind Brother, this movie is called?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the blind brother in question is played by Adam Scott.
Oh, God. All right.
And his sighted brother is played by Nick Kroll.
Oh, God.
Okay. And Adam Scott, as the blind brother, is a constant overachiever. He's the guy that he's running marathons for charity. Of course, he has to have poor Nick Kroll strapped to him so he can find his way. So Nick Kroll has to do all these challenging things that he keeps making him do.
Uh-huh.
And so you got the one, you got the overachieving brother, and then the brother who's, you know, the traditional slacker.
See, I'm already laughing, man. I'm in.
Right.
I'm already laughing at this. Okay.
But I'm gonna sweeten the pot for you.
Yeah.
Because one night Nick Kroll meets at a bar a lovely young woman who's going through a particularly bad breakup because the guy died, and she's played by Jenny Slate.
Oh, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm
really
in.
Need to say much more.
No, that's it. Are you kidding me? That's fantastic.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So you got the two of them eventually begin sort of fighting in a way over Jenny Slate. Nick Kroll has a one night stand with her. Then the next thing she doesn't really want to continue the relationship, but next thing you know, she's becoming Adam Scott's personal assistant and things just go from there. It's funny, but it actually, like, Kroll and Slate are like particularly good in this movie. I think the two of them actually find ways to develop more well-rounded characters than just sort of being like sort of rom-com pawns in a way through what is ultimately kind of a predictable plot line. And Adam Scott basically just plays like a jerk the entire movie, not without cause. There's a little bit more to his character, but he's really funny too.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well,
it's a good movie.
I'm looking at the credits now. I just looked up to the credits now, and the woman who directed it's her first movie. Apparently, she made a short called My Blind Brother. So I guess this is based upon a short film that she did.
Yes, back in 2003.
Right. Okay.
So it's taken a little while.
Her name is Sophie Goodhart. Is her name?
Yeah.
Boy, now has that picked up distribution?
It just did today or yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
The Stars Network picked it up.
Stars picked it up?
Probably,
okay.
Yeah, so you'll probably see it like a VOD release at some point, along with this probably a minor theatrical release.
Okay. All right, very cool. That sounds – I'm in, man. I mean
–
Yeah, that's just the cast alone. Forget it. I'm
in.
All right, very cool. I love Jenny Slate. I still think, you know, my favorite female performance from 2 years ago was Obvious Child.
Obvious Child.
She was phenomenal in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do we got next?
What we got next is a film that you're probably dreading in some way.
Uh-huh.
Because, and I think you already know what it is. But it's it was they brought it to Southwest as a literal work in progress that screened Monday night, and it's Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg's Sausage Party.
Oh, God. And this is the animated thing, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And for people who, it's an animated film, it's an R-rated animated comedy.
Now, and I haven't watched it, but I know that the Red Band trailer leaked.
Yes.
And I haven't watched it. I have not seen it.
You should. Okay, well, you should take a look at that. You can't play it on the air.
You should
take a look at it.
All right.
Because it does basically, it hints at what this movie, only hints at what this movie is like in its entirety and what it's actually going for. But the basic premise of the movie is that our food, while in the grocery store, are very eager to be picked up by humans, or as we're known as the gods. They very much want to get out of their packages and get out of the store and go into quote unquote the great beyond, basically. And then along the way, as sort of an explosion of food products all over the floor in the store, Seth Rogen, who plays one of the hot dogs
in
the
movie, of course he does.
Right, along with one of the buns that he wants to get with, is played by Kristen Wiig. And they've come to discover that what the real truth is once they leave the store, that food and humans don't exactly mix very well for the food. Okay, so it turns into this, like, this sort of, not a spoof of your tradition, Pixar movies, but it's just your general animated films where the characters are thrust out of their standard existence, their comfort zone, if you will, and put on this adventure where they're discovering all this stuff, and Seth Rogen's hot dog then has to figure out how to tell the rest of the food products that their entire belief system is somewhat flawed.
Okay. See, now this, you know, I'm not looking forward to the Neighbors sequel at all.
Right.
Not even remotely. But this sounds funny to me. This sounds good.
Yes. And I think if you watch the Red Band trailer, you will be more on board than your typical Seth Rogen film. It's incredibly R-rated.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously R-rated. And I dare to say that it's not just them doing just cheap entendre jokes. I mean, it's littered throughout. And sometimes they even recognize the fact and play up on that idea. But this film actually comes a lot closer to some of the best stuff we've seen on South Park than your traditional Seth Rogen stuff. Using this material to not just satirize, but actually to find a sort of a common ground for all warring belief system factions, if you will.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff that actually really struck me as kind of gold in this movie. I mean, it's incredibly funny at times. And you see the cast list of this thing. It's
everybody.
I mean, it's everybody's in it, including Nick Kroll.
Right.
Who I think is the first sort of mainstream, you know, per actor we know to actually have two characters known as the douche.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Cool. Then. So this is obviously it's going to get a release in August here. Trailer's out there, but
it will be released.
But it's very funny, obviously.
It's incredibly funny. It's one of the best things I've seen at the fest.
Okay. Cool. That's Sausage Party. If you're looking to check that one out. All right, Eric. Always a pleasure. You'll be writing about this stuff. People can read it where can people read some of your reviews?
My first dispatch actually is going to be going up at RogerEbert.com.
Okay, RogerEbert.com.
So a couple of these reviews will be up there, including Sausage Party.
Okay, cool. All right, Eric, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us all the time, man.
You got it,
all
man.
All right, have
Thank
a great
you.
Time for the rest of the time you're there, and have a good safe trip back, okay?
Thanks. Talk right, to
there
you when
I get back. We'll talk to Eric on Monday morning with the new reviews of the movies. There you go, exclusive preview of stuff that you can see in theaters that are now playing at South by Southwest.